From America's frontier, Nebraska, it's the Outdoor Connection with Rick Windham on News Talk 1240 KODY.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection, a special edition. T.J. Harding with the Mental Bucket is in, sponsor of the show, you know, good guy. We got to say that. How you doing this morning, bud?
I am fantastic. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I'm looking forward to trying this again. We tried it about a month ago, had people call in. Anything you have as a question for hunting, fishing, camping, boating, outdoor-related stuff, call in, and we'll hopefully be able to give you an answer. Between TJ and I, we've got somewhere short of a millennia in the outdoors experience and been there, kind of done that, both the good way and the stupid ways we continue to avoid, I'm sure. Yeah.
That should have worked a lot better than I thought it would.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What is the dumbest thing you've ever done in the outdoors?
Oh,
that's radio friendly.
That's radio friendly, yeah. While you're thinking, I'll tell people, if you got a question, call in 308-532-8221. That'll take you right into the studio, and we'll do our best to give you an answer. But anyway, what?
I would think it had to have been when I was in high school. We was fishing in the Middle Loop River north of Mullen, and there's a dead tree hanging out over the top of the water, and we were wading around and swimming and whatever else, and there's girls involved, of course, you know, and I was trying to impress the ladies and reached up and grabbed a hold of that dead tree branch. I was going to pull myself up out of the water with it. Well, that dead tree branch wasn't very strong, and that branch came down and went through. I still have a scar. I don't know if you can see it, but right here on my, went through my ear right there. So, yeah, that would rank up there in the top few anyhow.
It's hard to narrow down one. I think one of the dumbest ones I ever did was this was down in the Texas Hill Country where I kind of grew up down in that part of the world. And it was an old gristmill dam. And same type of thing, swimming, something like that. And I was going to demonstrate my Acapulco type cliff diving from the gristmill. And I asked the guy, I said, well, how deep's the water? He says, oh, it's plenty deep. No.
Not so much.
They told me they saw my feet still above the water stutter a little bit when I hit bottom. And I'm real lucky I didn't break my neck
or
something.
Absolutely.
I whacked myself pretty hard. I came up, I saw two dams, two of everybody for a while. Just kind of hung on to a rock for a while and leveled out. But that was pretty stupid to do. So anyway, turkey season is here.
Yes, sir. By golly, it sure is. Archery started yesterday.
Yep.
You know, I've been seeing a lot of birds. You know, I travel up through those canyons between Brady and Moorfield daily. And this morning I actually stopped. There's a bunch of birds still roosted. It's still early enough. They were still on the roost. Yesterday morning, one had pitched down and went a few miles. There's still one on the roost.
So right.
Right about the time I go by there, every day there's some birds in the trees right there close. And so I stop. I can see the strutters, you know, full strut in the tree.
In the tree,
you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I stopped and honked my horn at them, and the whole canyon echoed down the way. So give me a bit of a giggle first thing this morning. I love turkey hunting. So.
Shock calling.
Oh yeah,
they call it.
Yep.
You know, honking a horn at them, whatever.
Yep.
Do you use, when you're hunting, do you actually use that shock call technique to find them if you're putting them to roost?
Not necessarily. Most of the time, what I will do is more of a preseason scouting deal and see where I think they're roosting. You know, the day of the hunt, I like to be kind of sure of where they're going to be. I don't necessarily do the shock gobble during the hunt unless it's like a middle part of the day hunt. You know, if you strike out in the morning and, you know, trying to find the birds midday. But a lot of the time they get pretty tight-lipped midday, too, so that can be kind of tough. But
until they're done with the breeding of the hens, they don't talk much.
Right, yeah. But, you know, like I've told a lot of people, you know, don't get discouraged. I've shot probably more turkeys between 9 o'clock in the morning and noon than I have very first thing, you know, very first light. Those toms get tired of chasing the same hens. Like, where'd that call come from? And next thing you know, they're headed your way.
They'll come looking.
Yeah, if you stay put and have patience, you'll get that tom.
That's something I tell, you know, new hunters or somebody asks. When I'm doing my scouting, my preseason scouting in particular, I do not use a call very much at all.
Not at all.
Because I think that if you train if you're calling like a hen and trying to get that gobbler to come to you, and he does so and doesn't find anything, you've trained him not to do that.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, just like, you know, call shy coyotes. You know, everybody and their brother's got a Fox Pro these days. You know, and every coyote in three counties has heard Lightning Jack how many times, and there's a lot of people that are going back to using the old hand calls because, you know, the coyotes are getting wise to them, you know, electronic game calls.
So. I do mostly my manual calls because I kind of think the same thing. I think turkeys, coyotes, and I think they can recognize voices like we do.
I think so, to an extent. I've said for a long time, turkeys are the smartest dumb animal on the face of the earth, or the dumbest smart animal on the face of the earth. But
if they had a sense of smell of a deer, it'd be hard to hunt.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's one of those things, they can be the easiest animal to hunt or the most frustrating thing you've ever done, and that's probably why most people love hunting them.
I was talking with a friend of mine the other day. We were talking about using decoys. And I do that. I'll use a decoy early in the spring. And I usually limit myself to a hen and a half-strut jake. And I'll set it up. I'll have a rock or a brick or something in that hen, have her right on the ground, and then have that half-strut jake within a couple feet of her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to the boss gobbler in the area, that'll just infuriate the heck out of him because he sees some interloper coming in trying to breed one of his hens.
Mm-hmm.
I've had him run in and attack the jake, and I'm laughing so hard I can't aim straight.
Yep. I've done it too.
I've shot him at 5 or 6 yards at that because they're in fighting that jake.
You ever use a strutter decoy?
I do, but rarely. I have had a couple instances where I've called in maybe the dominant bird in that area, and I had a full strut off to the side, not out in the open, but he circled around and caught glimpse of that and left.
Yeah.
I think he just went, I don't want
to fight today.
I don't want to go in there and get my butt kicked.
Right. Nope. Yeah, it's kind of the same way with deer decoys. One of those things I've always kind of wanted to try but never have. You know, because a lot of people say, you know, you get the dominant buck coming in, you'll see that decoy, and he'll be mad enough and aggressive enough, he'll come right up.
But it works.
Yeah.
I've done it twice.
Have you? Or it could go the other way. You might come in and see that and like, I don't feel like getting my butt kicked today.
I've done that twice.
Awesome.
I have a full-body 3D decoy that we affectionately call Bucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put him out a couple nights, the night before the season starts, and then I can't find him in the morning. I'm looking around, and come to find out that the dominant buck has come in overnight and
horned him,
kicked Bucky's butt, tore him all to pieces. But year before last, I didn't get to hunt this last season because of my shoulder issues, but I had a buddy with me, and we're sitting in the blind, and he looked up and he says, uh-oh, it's showtime, because this buck was coming over and laser-focused on the decoy and came in, went nose-to-nose with him.
Hmm.
And you know how they all bull up, swell up, did his Arnold Schwarzenegger thing. And I had to wait for him a few seconds to step clear of my decoy to get a shot.
Yeah.
But that was, it works.
Oh, yeah.
It works. Folks, if you got a question to call in, please do so. 532-8221. TJ or I will try to answer your questions for you. I've had a couple of people tell me, they say, yeah, we'll try to call in, so I'm hoping they get a chance to do it.
There you go.
But back to turkey hunting. What'd you bring in at the shop to help the turkey hunters?
Right now I've got a pretty good selection of decoys, you know, Primos, HS Strut. I do have some coming today from a small distributor out of Kansas. I should have brought my invoice because I can't remember what they're called. They're made by a Kansas man that started out building decoys, you know, duck decoys, made crane decoys, and all this other stuff. I learned about this yesterday, so I'm pretty up to speed on what's going on. But they're going to be very similar to like a Dave Smith. I mean, they're going to be a high end, you know, very lifelike. They're not collapsible. I mean, you carry
a turkey. Must be hard body.
Yeah, they're hard body decoy. But the guy, my sales rep down there, he said they're very comparable to Dave Smith for about half the cost. Dave Smith, you got to figure, though, Dave Smith's $250 decoy,
right,
and they're about half that.
I have one.
Yeah, I had avians for a while. I still have them, but they're starting to not hold air quite as good. They look great, you know, when they're full, but as soon as they start leaking air, that my Jake decoy looks like somebody hit him in the middle of the back with a baseball bat.
The one I have, the paint job on it is just amazing. It has, as it moves in the sunlight, you get the same iridescence.
You get the glimmer, yep.
Yep, and that is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's a Jake. I said, man, it's a. I can see why they get the money out.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. There's a big difference between a $20, $30, $40 decoy, and you get up over the $100 range. I mean, a lot of people don't see the value, you know, in that, unless you're really serious about it. You know, then you can set them side by side, and you can see the difference once you get out there and you're actually hunting with them.
I use my decoys not only for hunting, but just to call in that bird to get a better picture than I already have.
I was going to say, you probably use it to take a picture and then tell everybody you got that close to a turkey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing what they, as you said earlier, they're the dumbest, hardest animal to hunt sometimes.
Right.
Some of the things they've done, I've had them do, is just, they're so hilarious. I was hunting east of town along the river one time, and this was a fall hunt, so in the fall I'll use more decoys. I have two reasons. Number one, in the fall they're grouping up.
Mm-hmm.
They're gregarious birds, so a bigger flock I think works better. And then two, if I've got a newbie with me, a young hunter or somebody just getting into it, I'll use them as range markers.
Oh, there you go.
And I tell them, man, if it's between that decoy and us, you can take it.
Within range.
And I was sitting there watching, and I had a decoy about 10 yards away off to my right, right along the edge of where the tall grass stopped and the field started. And I just caught movement out of my peripheral vision, and a coyote launched out of the grass and took my decoy off its stake. And it hit it and took one roll and then came up looking around like, oh, man, that wasn't right.
Hope nobody saw me do that.
And I was laughing so hard I couldn't do anything but watch him. It was so hilarious. So give us a call, folks, 532-8221. As we were joking on the first show, try to stump the chumps. We'll see what we can come up with.
There you go.
What else you brought into the shop? You mentioned the decoys.
Yeah, I got some decoys. I've got a few calls. I'm waiting on, I was really hoping to have it by now, but the way distribution is, you know, these days, you could order it a month ago and it's still sitting on a pallet in a warehouse somewhere. But I do have more stuff coming, a lot of calls, some more of your standard name brand decoys, you know, your more Primos and whatnot, HS Strut, Avians. I've got a couple shotguns in. I got a Beretta A300 Outlander in. It's a waterfowl gun, but you could obviously use it for turkey as well.
Camoed up, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then I did get a Winchester SX4 in yesterday as well. That's really nice.
That's a fast gun.
Those are fantastic guns. So I've got a couple of nice camouflage shotguns in. Working on shells right now.
Is that a call for us there, Mr. Trisson? All right. Yes. Good morning. You're on the air. What can we do for you?
Good morning, Rick and TJ.
Howdy.
My son and I were looking forward to spring turkey. I get a kick out of him. He's 17 now, and he's been successful with a couple three deer hunts.
Very good.
But he's yet to be able to call in a tom and get one. But he's tried, and then we tried stalking, turkey.
Near impossible.
It can be.
he did nail a hen in the fall, but. He'll say, Dad, deer are so much easier to get. You know, these turkeys, they're just too darn smart, especially the toms. But, one thing I drive the canal once in a while, whether it be fishing or jumping a duck with my son. And, you know, I know that they like people to use, well, you're required to use steel shot when you're waterfowl hunting because of the potential of lead poisoning in the water. But it kind of bugs me when here I am complaining about something in such a beautiful place to hunt and fish, but I'll see where somebody set up on the canal and they did trap shooting.
And left all their hulls there.
I could almost promise you that they did not use And I hate it too. They'll leave their shells, and you know they're lead shot. And I just wish they would understand. Well, if there is a legitimate reason that we don't use lead for waterfowl, maybe we should keep that in mind when we shoot anything over water.
That's true. Lead in the water is not as critical element as a wounded bird with lead in it. I mean, you may not get it, but it's going to die of lead poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons they did it, too. And originally, one of the reasons they did it was that they were finding eagles that were either dead or suffering from lead poisoning, and it was from eating the wounded game they had caught. So...
Well, whatever they're doing to try to protect eagles, it's working.
You know,
I can remember in the Lake California, I saw my very first bald eagle going up skiing. And then I remember this part of the country where you just never saw them until about 10, 12 years ago. You'd start to see one occasionally. And now I see far more bald eagles than I see rooster pheasants, but that's beside the point.
You got a point there.
And one more thing, I'll get on my soapbox again. I would sure, and I know the state, they try very hard to encourage young, to introduce the youth to fishing and hunting.
Mm-hmm.
What I've never quite understood is why the giving them a break on their permits and such, why that stops at 16 and not 18.
I think we talked about that one time, and I got an answer for you.
Okay.
The general consensus, and nobody knew for sure because it's been so long, but the general consensus was that's when a kid got his driver's license and could start doing stuff on his own.
There you go. I was going to say the same thing.
So that's where the 16 came in.
Okay. Was because driver's license age.
Right.
You know, but as far as financially, and you know, generally, even your adult permits here in Nebraska, they're not. When you think of all the value, you know, it's well worth the money. But yet, most kids living at home don't have full-time jobs. And at best, they have part-time jobs. And then, like my kids, they're very involved in sports. They work their tail off over the summer. But during the school year, they don't. You know, they don't have a lot of money come in, so that leaves Dad, and which is fine. I'll spend my last dollar for hunting and fishing. I'd rather spend it on that end than bailing him out of jail 5 years down the road.
Ain't that the truth?
But, I've often wanted. I enjoy what you guys are doing here, and yeah, TJ, you've got a selection in there of firearms now that just boggles my mind. I've got a little inheritance I'm hoping to get from a second cousin.
I like how you
that
talk.
I met twice in my life, and he's leaving me just a very small. I get a very small inheritance from him. When I say small, it's small. But when that comes in, I'm going to come in and we're going to talk turkey.
There we go.
I like it. Okay.
All right, you guys.
Thanks for calling.
Have a good one. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Yeah, that's one of the things that you have really done different from when Don had the store. And I don't know if Don was that much of a hunter, but
he is, or you know, he was and still is. But he, you know, he hung his hat on the bait, you mm-hmm. know, the bait and the fish and stuff. Primarily the bait. You know, he went and got his own minnows, and you know, took
right,
a lot of
right.
pride in that, and rightfully so. So
yeah, he did well. I hear music in the background, which means we got to take a commercial break. So stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after these messages.
Got some hot news from NASA, folks. Saturn's rings are disappearing faster than anybody thought. And it's very, very bad news. Saturn's rings disappearing is being caused by excessive global heat from Earth's auto industry, SUVs and stuff, and factory farming, along with President Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accords. Actually, I made that up. But it sounds just like the drivel we always are told whenever science announces a new crisis, right? Now, the real reason Saturn's rings are disappearing is that they're made mostly of ice. Gravity is pulling the rings down to the surface of Saturn, and they're falling to the surface as ring water. Scientists who are brilliant at predictions used to think that the rings had 300 million years to live. But after a Cassini spacecraft Saturn flyby, the science has been revised. Now the rings only have 100 million years to live. I truly hope they and we make the best of that time. Because 100 million years, I mean, it'll be up before we know it, and the sea levels are going to have risen so high that we're all going to probably have drowned by then. Unless we're dead first. It's 100 million years.
Anglers and hunters, pros and beginners, find outfits and gear for every level and class of outdoorsmen at the Minnow Bucket in North Platte. Are you ready for archery season? Stop by the Minnow Bucket and let TJ help you prepare for spring archery or youth shotgun. He has the knowledge and know-how from his lifelong experience of hunting and fishing in western Nebraska. Check out their Facebook page for more details. And stop by the Minnow Bucket at 1013 South Jeffers for all your archery needs.
Here's your forecast on News Talk 1240 AM and 106.1 FM. We'll see a few scattered rain showers here for today with mostly cloudy skies, a high in the low 50s. Winds out of the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, a slight chance for rain showers early on, mostly cloudy, a low near 33. By Saturday, mostly sunny and breezy, high 56 degrees. Sunday, mostly sunny, and we'll see high around 70. Weather is brought to you by North Platte Airport with daily jet service to Denver and beyond. Book at united.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Outdoor Connection. You got TJ Harding from the Minnow Bucket here. The place to go and stop and get all your needs for your next adventure out in the field. And then we're talking a little bit about the outdoors today. Call in with any question you got, 532-8221, and we'll see if we can answer it. We've talked a little bit about what you got into the shop for turkey season. You mentioned calls, you mentioned decoys. Now, it's archery season right now, so what do you cover for archery?
Right now, and I kind of messed that up because I put all the archery stuff away back in December, you know, get ready for ice fishing season because I have such limited space down there, you know, so I had to take something off the wall to put something back out on the wall and wasn't even really thinking that I didn't think there was going to be as much interest in archery turkey this year because there wasn't really much last year, but that was my first real spring in the shop.
And I think last year a lot of people were dealing with the COVID thing more than now.
Right, that and the fact that a lot of people didn't realize what I had at the shop or what I was going to bring into the shop. So I got
that's because I haven't hadn't written about you yet and you haven't been on the radio. That's why.
Right, there you go. I owe it all to Rick Linda.
I wish.
But no, yeah. So I went back and I got my archery box. And I've got some broadheads. There's some releases. I do have arrows. I got the turkey broadheads. I still have a couple crossbows. You know, just pretty basic. You know, I don't have peep sights. I do have sights and I have rests, but I don't have, like, the peeps. And when I was setting things up, you know, I had a lot of people ask me if I was going to put a bow press in there. Because, you know, when I was with Cabela's, I could do all that. Right. I could restring. I could tie in peeps. I could, you know, put on D-loops. It all works. But with the limited space that I have, I was like, okay, I could either put in an area to have a bow press, or I can put a reloading bench. I couldn't have both. I just don't have the room. So,
well, now that you got your FFL for reloading, yep. I understand why
exactly.
You did that.
So, yeah, the reloading bench kind of took priority over the bow press. But no, I mean, I've got a decent selection of stuff. You know, we need to get it out. It's still sitting in that box that I pulled out of the back 2 days ago. But there's a lot of people asking. You know, a lot of people saying, hey, we need some broadheads. I had a guy call the other day looking for a release, you know, so he come in and we found one for him. And whisker biscuits, I got a couple of those. And just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I'll have a better selection in the fall, you know, but there's more following of this archery turkey than I thought there was going
to
be.
One of the hardest things I have to find is I'm a stick bow shooter, long bows and recurve.
Mm-hmm.
Finding just a standard two-blade broadhead
right
is getting tougher.
Absolutely.
Do you have any connection with Zwicky?
I could probably look and get them. The reason I don't carry them is because of demand.
A few of us out here.
Both people in North Platte that shoot traditional, I'd have two really good customers. But But no, it's one of those things that even I was with Cabela's, I mean, the stores, I worked in the Sydney store and I worked in the one up in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. We didn't even have it in the store. Mm. You know, you could order it, you know, it's at the warehouse, right. But they dictated that it wasn't popular enough to determine that it would have to have a spot on the wall.
When I used to work with Cabela's doing my seminars and stuff, I was talking about this with people, and they were explaining to me that they'd put something in the catalog, and then they had a certain, it had to hit so many units sold, and if it didn't do that for like two catalog cycles, it was gone.
Yeah.
You didn't see it again.
Yeah, bargain cave.
And probably went in the bargain cave and maybe never see it again.
Right.
It made sense. You know, they're in the business to make money with it.
Sure.
But like I said, there's a bow I need to bring in and show you. It's actually a replica of a Mongolian horse bow.
Oh, nice.
And
that would be cool.
It is. It's a fun little bow. 45-pound pull. Double recurve, basically, is what it is. I love it. It doesn't even have a shelf on it. It's just a stick.
Yeah.
You got to wear a glove so the fletching doesn't cut you as it goes across your hand. But that's a fun one, too.
Where'd you come across that?
It used to be Roger Atkinson. Did you ever know him?
I don't believe so.
He used to live here, and he had a place out by Lake Maloney. He had an archery range, indoor archery range, and then they had a 3D archery target out there. And he had a bow shop, and he made bows. And
I think I might know who you're talking about. The one that had the, I think he was a, was he a Hoyt dealer or PSE dealer?
PSE.
Okay, yeah, I know you're talking. I had him restring a couple of bows, but I didn't know that was his name.
Yep, and he called me one day, and he said he just got this bow, and he says, you got to come look at this. And went over and looked at it, and I got a good deal on it, took it home and have hunted with it. My first hunt with it was turkey.
Nice.
And, I had Roger make cedar arrows for it and do a, you know, four fletch on it. And then I had those Zwicky broadheads. I wanted it to be as close to Genghis Khan and 800 years ago as it could be. And I took a little Jake with it, but that was fun.
That's fun.
Is that our note to we're done?
In a few seconds.
Okay. What else did you have for turkey hunting stuff?
Well, you know, that's about it for turkey, but yeah, next big thing too, we got the walleye spawn coming in.
Yeah.
You know, and that I would think by next weekend people are going to be flocking to Lake McConaughey. We've got
And Maloney,
absolutely. If it depends on the water, they need to let some more water coming through. I guess it's been kind of wishy-washy out there. But, for trolling along the dam, I've got the Thunder Sticks, the Husky Jerks. I have some new ones in there called a Bagley. They're tied in with Northland.
Yep.
Those are really cool. Really great finish.
Fire Tiger patterns?
Oh, yeah. Fire Tiger, Chartreuse, anything with blue and purple is always popular. The vampire-looking ones with the red on the face and the silver on the back.
Fire Tiger seems to be very popular at McConaughey.
You bet.
Maloney is interesting. I had one of the fisheries biologists tell me one time that out of all the lakes and all the, they measure angler hours on the water. Maloney is number one in the state.
Is that right?
And I think that is due to the railroad and the guys, you know, it's not just the weekend.
It's not a weekend deal.
There's guys that are not working in the middle of the week, you know, because of the schedules and
stuff.
So they are out there pounding the water all the time.
Sure.
And from my den, I can watch them.
Yeah.
And they are out there. They're I took some pictures out the other day. The ice broke up on Saturday, and there were guys out there trolling Sunday. And I mean, you come to the boat ramp, and you have to, you know, barely idle because you're bumping ice chunks out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
So there's some hardcore fishermen in the area.
You're darn right there is.
What else we got? We got a couple minutes left or a couple seconds left, so anything else you want to touch on?
Oh, I mean, the guns and ammo thing. I did get a couple big shipments of firearms this week. Handguns. I had over 20 handguns come in on Wednesday.
Nice.
And I think I have four or five left. I mean, they're just flying off. But I do have a couple Glocks, Glock 19s. I've got a 1911 down there. I've got a Springfield. I do have an AR pistol, quotation, looking deal. Long guns, I've got some Ruger's 10/22. I got a couple Henry lever actions and a pump 22. And then of course, you know me, I'm a bolt action rifle guy, so I had to get some fun stuff there. Bergera, Weatherby, Winchester, Some more Savages do have a couple 22-250s. A lot of people have been asking for them. Nobody's been able to get them.
Seems to be coming back.
It's very much coming back.
Yeah.
You know, and if I could have ammo for it, I'd probably sell even more of them. But I've talked to several places, you know, not just customers, but actual other gun stores and stuff like McCook, Kearney, Cozad, et cetera, and they have not been able to find a 22-250 anywhere. I have three of them in the shop right now.
Hey.
So, you know, it's one of those things that if that's what you're looking for, I wish I could help you with the ammo side, but I do have the guns, so
we were talking,
bring me some brass.
We were talking off the air about, you know, those guns that you trade away or you wish you never did. One of mine was a Ruger No. 1 Heavy Beaver Tail front 22-250.
Oof, yeah, that would have been a tough one.
I should have never got rid of that
one.
But anyway, it looks like we're done for this week, so thanks again for coming in.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And we appreciate the people that listen, call in. It's really fun to do this show. So
don't be bashful out there, folks. I'm not going to bite you. Rick probably won't either.
No. We won't do that. So we'll see you next week on the Outdoor Connection. Have a great weekend.